Welcome to Success Is Podcast. I'm your host, Phil Portman, serial entrepreneur, author, and podcast host. Whether success for you is more money, time with your family, a healthy, well-balanced life, or freedom, I'm interviewing guests and getting you the advice to make it happen. So join me as we uncomplicate the complicated, help you define success, and give you the strategies to make it happen. Hello, and thank you for joining me on the Success Is Podcast. I'm your host, Phil Portman. Joining me today is Michael McFall. Michael is a successful entrepreneur who went from being a minimum wage barista at Big B Coffee to an effective business leader, author, founder of Global Orange Development, and the co-founder CEO of Big B Coffee, which is currently has over 350 stores in 14 states. Thank you for joining us today, Michael.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Philip.
So what does success mean to you?
Well, you know, I've got a personal I like to think about success from a lifestyle perspective mostly. And from a lifestyle perspective, I mean in terms of how I interact with my day and how I interact with my week and my month. And so I've been focused for many, many years on the idea of having interesting shit to do every day. Right. And that is success to me. I wake up in the morning and I'm fired up. I woke up this morning. I go to my calendar. I look down. I see I'm doing this podcast with you. I get excited about that. That's great. I have, I've got a hockey practice with my 6-year-old today. I've got the first birthday party at 3 o'clock for my close family friend. It's her first birthday. You know, and so I wake up in the morning and I look down and it's like, am I fired up about my day? So to me, that is, for me, that's success. But then from a broader perspective, I think that success is supporting others, supporting your loved ones, supporting people that you interact with on a daily basis in building a life that they love. And so how can I contribute to let's say you, for example, today, I have this engagement with you today. How can I support you in this quest of building a life that you love? And that is, that mantra has become the purpose of our entire organization. So it's my personal mantra. It's what I believe that we should all be doing is supporting each other and building lives that we love. But then also as a company, we are now, that is why we show up. That is what we're doing is no matter who you are, whether you're a customer, whether you're an employee at a store, whether you're a vendor, doesn't matter, however you interact with us, our purpose is to support you in building a life that you love. And to me, that is success. And I have this grand vision. I go deep into visioning. I'll attribute just about anything I've done interesting or important in the world to some sort of a visioning process. But I have this grand vision that I'm 75 years old. I'm in Orlando or Vegas because those are the only two venues in America that could support our group at that point because there'll be 10, 12, 15,000 people in the room. And I get to sit there and I get to give my last keynote, my last engagement with Big B Coffee before I retire. And I know that I have had an impact, positive impact on everyone in that room in supporting them and building a life that they love. And to me, I will drift off into the sunset knowing that my life was well lived.
That's awesome. So I got to ask, because I introduced you as you started off at Big B Coffee as just a barista, but then your title is also the co-founder and CEO of Big B Coffee. How is that possible?
Well, there's a nuance to the story. And so I was a barista in the first store. I wasn't really planning on being in the coffee business. I was working on a research project at Michigan State University, preparing to go back to graduate school. What happened was my partner, Bob Fish, invited me to sit down for an interview and talk about me becoming, more integral to the operation, becoming a manager, and taking a leadership position. And so what ended up happening that particular day was March of 1997. What happened that particular day was it was a beautiful spring day. We sat down for this interview, quote interview, and we popped up and we went outside. It was that first spring day where you can actually smell spring, and it's beautiful outside. It was probably 65 degrees. And we went for this 4-hour walk around East Lansing. And we didn't know each other because I was a barista in his store. I worked open to 3 and he worked from like 4 p.m. to close. And so we never crossed over. So we didn't know, but we go on this 4-hour walk. At the end of that walk, we shake hands and we agree to set up a new company, to be equal partners in that company and use that company as the vehicle for growth for the brand, Big B Coffee. And we did that on a handshake in that moment after really knowing each other for 4 hours. And one thing led to another. Wow. And 27 years later. But so then really what happened was I became the assistant manager of that first store. We had one store. I became the assistant manager of store one. I left my research job at the university and went headlong into coffee. And then June of 1998, we did form a new entity called Global Orange Development. And that's the company that we all work for today. It's the franchisor of Big B Coffee. Mm-hmm. And it probably took 3 or 4 or 5 years. I can't remember the exact dates, but he sold his original store to someone else. And then we grew Global Orange Development together. And so I'm a co-founder in Global Orange Development, which, you know, he'll say all day long was really the company that launched the business.
Got it. Yeah. So that was, I'd like to hear a little bit about your mindset in that moment, right? Because I'm guessing starting off at Big B Coffee, that was just kind of a side gig, some beer money, right? And you made a major and potentially risky decision in a moment there. What was going through your head in that moment? I mean, how did you come to that decision in that moment?
Well, I think, you know, when I rewind the clock and I look at it, I really truly enjoyed working in the store. I didn't know it at the time, but hospitality is in my blood. And I love showing up to work. I love putting the apron on. I love going out front and I love taking care of people. And so I was really enamored with the business. And then crosshatch that with, it didn't take a rocket scientist to see what was happening with coffee. I mean, this is 1997. Starbucks had just, you know, landed in Chicago. They were building, you know, I don't even know how many they built, but they built a ton of stores really quickly in Chicago. And so coffee was becoming a thing, and a very big thing. And so the fact that I love that the business, and I love working there. And secondly, sensing this pretty significant opportunity. And then third, my business partner was doing something very different in coffee than anybody else. And I saw that as an opportunity. So it all lined up for me that it was a place for me. And I didn't know what I was doing. I mean, I was going back to graduate school, but I didn't know for what, you know, and so I just, you know, I lined up with that idea and threw myself at it. And, you know, looking back on it, my parents put me through a private college. They invested deeply, deeply in me, in multiple ways. And I think back to the moment when I told my mom, because my mom was a professor at Michigan State, and I was working for one of her colleagues, one of her best friends. And I think back to the moment of me going to her, because I mean, that research position was like plump. I mean, it was plump because I was getting published in articles. I mean, I was going to get the handpicked graduate school, no doubt about it. And so then I tell her I'm going to leave that behind and I'm going to go
do coffee,
be assistant manager of a coffee shop.
Yeah.
And I mean, my parents, I mean, bless them. They supported me fully. They never one time said anything about the decision I was making. I think they just saw, you know, my life was my life and I was going to do what I was going to do. And away I went.
That's great. So Big B Coffee is a franchise. So you deal with a lot of franchise owners and that would include onboarding them and coaching them. And I'd love to hear kind of your interpretation or some of the qualities that you see in individuals that make them successful.
Well, I mean, that's essentially the premise of my first book, right? So I wrote a book called Grind. It's right here. And that book is my experience. This is Grind here. My experience of working with people in startup, because that was my whole life was supporting people in starting these businesses and making these businesses successful. And so I tried to take the lessons from the successful owners, and I also tried to look at what maybe made people fail. And so the, you know, because think of a franchise. You have a very similar concept that everyone is executing the same model, same brand, same menu, and some make it successful and some don't. And so what are the variables there? And so the keys that I came out of that with were that, you know, most of the people that I saw that were successful, one, they brought an enormous amount of positive energy and enthusiasm. You couldn't beat them down. You know, yeah. they were getting kicked in the teeth every day operating their business, and they would just keep showing up and they would keep doing it. And so that is a, you know, to me, that is probably the number one factor in being successful in a startup, is just the stick-to-itiveness, the drive of, and showing up with an amazing attitude. In fact, I had a, do you know the WJR show, Business Biographies? It's really well done. It's done by that guy that does Startup Nation. He's great. So anyway, we get done with this whole interview, and he said to me, he said, man, like, you really seem to make this all look easy. And I, it took me back. Like, I never thought of that before. I never, you know, and so I didn't have a response in that moment. And then I called him back like 3 days later, and I said, you know, I've given that a lot of thought. And I think the thing is, it's all about attitude. And the attitude you show up to your business with every single day. And to me, I've always had just an incredibly optimistic approach. I'm, you know, we're always focused on growing and improving and getting better. And that fills me, you know? And so, because the flip side of that is pessimism, right? Is negativity. And I'll tell you, I can smell that from a mile away. And I instantly know that somebody isn't going to be successful.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree with you more. In the entrepreneurship world, if you're not an individual who embraces, you know, difficult situations and that you're going to run into stuff, don't get into it.
Yeah. You know? Well, you know, I think one of the analogies I make is that, to me, business was always a game. And so, you know, like, you're playing a game of Monopoly, right? And you get beat somehow, or something goes wrong, and, you know, you get upset, but, you know, you just move on and you just figure out what you need to do next. And to me, that is so much of what business is you know, to get emotionally invested in an outcome so that if something goes wrong, it impacts you. It's like, you just got to keep showing up and playing the game and making good decisions and making the right moves day in and day out. And the other, so you asked, like, what are some of the keys to successful operators? You know, another one is a longer term perspective. And so, you know, I watch all kinds of people come into my world, and some will show up, and I'll tell you, I see a red blinking light when somebody shows up and they start asking questions like, how much money are they going to make in year one? Right? How long is it going to take to get their investment back? You know, these kind of short term questions. You know, I one thing that I rant about is when you set up an operating agreement, talking about your exit clauses. And I'm like, exit clauses? What are we talking about exit clauses for? Right? Like, we haven't even started the business and you're talking about exit clauses.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, you got one foot in, one foot out, right? Yeah. Right.
Hey. Yeah. And so, you know, to me, the longer term perspective is mission critical. And I'll just tell you a little story. So, you know, I came into my business and I was a barista, and my partner had founded the company, and he was, you know, he's 9 years older than me. He's a brilliant guy, right? An amazing restaurateur. And I had a lot to learn. And so I spent the better part of 14 years being his for lack of a better term, his protege's underling. And I learned and I learned and I learned and I learned. Even though we owned exactly the same number of shares in the company, even though we made penny for penny the same amount of money every single year, so on and so forth, I was in this role of underling, and I was okay with that because I knew I had a lot to learn. There became a moment, 2010, 12-ish, that I went to him and I said, I think the apprenticeship is over. And I said, for my own ego, for the security of my family, I need the world to know that we are co-managing this business, and that I am that I am not a vice president of this company, right? And so, I mean, my partner's brilliant. He understood completely, and we formed this new thing, which is co-CEOs, right? And I'll tell you, the world has a hard time with co-CEOs and the concept. And so, but we've been doing it forever anyway. And then we've been co-managing the business for a long time anyway. And so just to put that moniker or that title on my name, and for him to share the CEO role, didn't change anything. It didn't change a thing. And but the reason I tell you that story is I didn't get antsy after 2 years. I didn't get antsy after 5 years. I didn't get antsy after 10 years. I was incredibly patient. I committed myself to the long term, and it was 14, 15 years before, I took over as, co-CEO with him. And so that long-term perspective to me is incredibly important. And people that go into entrepreneurship, and they want to do this rapid rise and scale it and liquidate it and move on and move to a beach in Tahiti. It's like, man, that's lightning in a bottle, right? That's like winning the lottery. That cannot be your perspective. This thing, I tell people, if you are not taking this as a 7 to 10 year proposition, don't start. 7 to 10 years, don't start.
Yeah, no. And the thing is that you've described too, is that you get excited about what you're doing and the process around it, right? Like, this is what you were put on this earth for. And I think there's a lot of people that look at business or investments as like, hey, I'm going to suffer for this amount of time, and then eventually I'm going to start enjoying life. And it doesn't work that way, does it?
Well, that's, I've got a whole presentation I give around entrepreneurship. And one of the things I talk about is the myth of workaholism. And you don't have to be a workaholic. You don't have to work 70 hours a week. And I've always said, if I had to work 70 hours a week to have a successful business, I didn't want the successful business. And so to me, life is so much more important. I guess this gets into success, right? Life is so much more important, and living a life that you're proud of is way more important than, being worth $50 million and having a successful business.
Yeah. So how do you balance your desire for doing interesting things and interesting experiences with the reality of daily life and work obligations?
You have to grow your team. You have to grow your team. That's the only answer. And most entrepreneurs struggle with that. And I see it all the time in very, very successful businesses where the CEO is still deeply involved in all kinds of things that they just don't need to be involved in. And so you've got to transition. And by the way, that's a great segue into promoting my book, my second book.
Your second book, Grow.
Yeah, it comes out in June 6th. and so Grow is about that transition. I mean, it exactly takes that on, which is you have to grow into a leader, right? And growing into a leader means growing a team of leaders. Sorry, I don't know how to silence my Apple Watch. I just got it. But and so growing a team of leaders that are taking over for you in all the different disciplines within the organization, and then being okay with the fact that they're going to do it differently They're gonna have their own ways, and you have to support them even if you might disagree. And so growing that team allows you the freedom to the freedom to live life too. And you know, I don't want to be naive. I mean, there are years at the beginning where it can be brutal. I mean, it can be brutal. And so, you know, I don't want to mitigate that. If you're gonna start a new business, I mean, you've got a few years of grinding, you know. And so, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, my first 3 to 5 years that I was working 35 hours a week. You know, that's not the case.
Right.
But I do think that there is this, you know, when a car runs at 5,500 RPMs and you don't have a lot left there. You know, like you can't accelerate beyond that, right? And so for me, if you're running at 5,500 RPMs all the time, when something comes up that really needs your attention, you don't have, what do they call that? The power width, whatever that's called in a car, where you've got the most amount of power within the car. And it's like, that's what we need to do as leaders, so that when something big comes along, you have the ability where you're running at 25 RPMs and you can take it up to 5,500 for a period of time, and then you've got to back it back down. And so that to me is the nuance. And I tell a story in Grind, and I'm going off on tangents here, but I tell a story in Grind about, I was a hockey player and I was young, and a coach came up to me and he said, you know, Mike, because I had this propensity to always skate as hard as I could. I was always skating as hard as I could, wherever I went. And he came up to me and said, if you're always skating as hard and as fast as you can, everybody knows exactly how to defend you, because you're going to be going that speed. He says, it's about slowing down and leaving a gap and then accelerating at certain moments and so on. And I see that as a great analogy to life, that you have to have the ability to speed up at certain moments. And if you're always running at 5,500 RPMs, you don't have that ability.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for your time today. For our audience listening in, how do they follow you? How do they get a hold of your books? What do you got going on?
Well, I mean, very shortly, within a couple of weeks, there'll be a website, michaeljmcfall.com. which will have everything that I'm doing. You know, in advance of that, that'll be out by June 1st. That'll be out by June 1st. So, and then prior to that, you know, LinkedIn probably is the best way to get to me.
Great. And book coming out here soon, Grow. You'd be able to buy that everywhere else.
Yeah, I think anywhere books are sold, I certainly hope they're going to be there. And so, no, they will be. Anywhere books are sold, it'll be available.
Well, thank you so much for your time today, Michael McFall. Pleasure having you today. And thank you for our audience for listening. We'll see you all next time.